The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show Hour 1 Podcast.
Hey, welcome to Nashville. We are here for day two of the SEC Men's Basketball Tournament. A lot of activity going on the court. We'll keep you updated. And there is plenty to talk about as we say hello to you for the next 4 hours. Thanks so much for being a part of the program. We'll talk about some of the decisions. By the way, as we're coming on the air, a former SEC coach, Mark Fox, who was at Georgia, has been let go at Cal. It's that time of the year. Yesterday, the big news was Jim Boeheim, and where is the camera? And today, of course, it is many other things. We'll talk to a number of people, both here and around, as we get you going, as well as your phone calls at 855-242-7285. Brandon Miller is in the news, of course, as we told you yesterday, calling the whole situation just really heartbreaking. Brandon Miller meeting the media for the first time. So will Chris Beard be the new coach at Ole Miss? That is the question that many are asking. It has people here talking. I was at lunch a little while ago, and that was one of the big topics of conversation. As most of you know by now, he was he played for the national championship a couple of years ago. He was the head coach at Texas, where they were the number one team in the country. Got fired there, and now on the top of the list. Pete Thamel with that story yesterday. Pete, thanks for the time. We appreciate it. Good afternoon, and tell us what you know about the Chris Beard situation at Ole Miss.
Hey, Paul, thanks for having me. I think the Chris Beard to Ole Miss is on track to happen, as Jeff Borzello and I reported yesterday. And I really think that, there'll be some clarity and some finality on that in the upcoming days. Look, there's obviously a lot of complexities to hiring Chris Beard. This was never going to be a smooth and linear process, just in terms of the vetting and the background checking that needs to happen in the wake of his arrest while he was going to Texas, obviously his firing there, and then the charges being dropped. So as of right now, he's the leading candidate. I'd be surprised if he's not the next coach at Ole Miss, Paul. But there is there are likely still a few more days of vetting that are going to happen before Chris Beard in Ole Miss come to a formalized agreement on him being the next coach.
Pete, again, you have to always be careful on stories like this, what you hear, because there's so much information out there and so much misinformation for that matter. But I was talking to some people today, and they were putting out one narrative that a lot of what we heard back in the beginning of the basketball, the beginning of this year, I should say, simply wasn't true. I mean, I realize Texas obviously felt compelled to fire him. Can you help sort out what Ole Miss is trying to determine? I mean, they say they're doing due diligence, whatever that means.
Yeah, Paul, I think that if you're Ole Miss and you're on the cusp of making a decision that is going to be scrutinized in the way this one is, you want to make sure that you have done every ounce of due diligence. You've talked to everybody possible at the university. You've talked to everybody possible that you can in law enforcement. What you can't have happen if you're Ole Miss is you make this hire and then something pops up 3 days later that undercuts it. So, there is a lot to unpack with Chris Beard. There are two sides to every story. And what the Ole Miss officials, and this is going to go right up to the president's office, have to determine is whether Chris Beard's versions of how that unfolded, and then obviously what law enforcement determined, are the truth.
And Pete, I know I'm asking a question that you may not have an answer for, But do you have any understanding what Texas used to pull the trigger? I mean, I know because the story has obviously changed a lot since the initial booking and the initial news of this breaking a couple of weeks ago, not a couple of months ago now.
So when you look at what Texas decided to do, the arrest happened on the morning of December 12th. Texas suspended him without pay immediately, and then they fired him January 5th. So the fact that it took 3 weeks, to me, and this is my read of it, determined that there was some ambiguity about the events. And then when he was fired, it was called unacceptable behavior that makes him unfit to serve as the head coach of our university. So that doesn't hint at Texas, you know, believing a certain version of events. To me, I always read what Texas had was basically like, this has drawn a lot of bad publicity to the university, so we're gonna fire you for cause. And most coaching contracts have clauses in their fall that allot for that. So, there's part of the reason why this is going to take some time and has been taking some time for Ole Miss is that there is a layer of ambiguity hanging over those events.
Talking to Pete Thamel. Pete, if I could ask you about another story that we were all interested in yesterday, and it was utterly bizarre to watch, and that was the end of Jim Boeheim's career. I realized it's been almost 24 hours since that game ended, about 22 hours since the announcement. Do you have any better understanding, and I realize you're working on a lot of different things, and that may not be the high on your priority list, but what exactly went down? Because it was so awkward to watch him at the press conference after the game, and then the next thing you know, he's gone, and no comments from him.
Yeah, I have a pretty good feel for that, Paul. I actually have a column that's about to come up on ESPN.com here in the next few minutes, sort of taking a look at Jim Boeheim and what happened. And look, there's no ambiguity there. It was awkward, Paul. It was really awkward. The timing was awkward. The press release that didn't use the word retirement, that didn't have quotes from Jim Boeheim, that didn't define a role for what he will be doing potentially for the university going forward. And if you compare it to the Duke situation, which is, again, an easy comparison because it's a legendary ACC coach who really not only defined an athletic department but an institution for a generation plus. In Boeheim's case, it's two generations, right? The Duke situation was handled very deftly, I think, Paul. There was a refined announcement. There was also a clear succession plan. John Shire basically got to go recruit to his era for more than a year. They had meetings of what the next staff would do, you know, during normal Duke basketball time. So it was all very dialed up. And I talked to Mike Krzyzewski about this morning for the column on Boeheim, and he really felt like that helped set up John Shire to succeed. Now, obviously, they're not the juggernaut Duke that's going to be a one seed that we know, but I feel like they're one of the most dangerous teams with their talent and the way they're playing now heading into the NCAA tournament. Mike Krzyzewski, quite frankly, Paul, was proud of the way he set up that succession plan. There has really been no refined and defined plan in a similar way at Syracuse. It was known that Adrian Autry was going to take over, and it was talked about, but it was not in any sort of formal way where you're going to recruits' houses and you're saying he's going to be the coach X. There was a lot of ambiguity. I do think the one thing that the timing of this does, Paul, is it sets up Adrian Autry, who's the longtime assistant there. He's been there since 2011. He played there in the early 90s. He's a really well-regarded coach in ACC coaching circles. But you can now say to recruits, okay, you're going to come play for Red Autry, and this is what Syracuse basketball is going to be like. There's now a defined and refined vision of where it's going. The nightmare scenario for Syracuse was that Boeheim tried to hang on, they lose some of the talented young players on their roster. Now, they weren't very good this year, Paul, but there are a couple good young building blocks in that program, especially like a Judah Mintz, the talented young point guard. So at least what they have now is clarity going forward. What they don't have is the year building up to it in order to better set up Adrian Autry to succeed. But I agree, Paul. The whole thing was very sudden. It was very awkward, and I went to Syracuse. I covered the team there for a number of years, earlier in my career. And I even told Jim Boeheim this. Like, it's never easy with Jim Boeheim. It was never going to be easy with Jim Boeheim. And the column I wrote was basically like, this was the almost perfectly imperfect ending for how this was going to go.
And, Pete, before you go on that subject, I mean, we've watched this now a couple of times in basketball. Jay Wright just walked away really at the zenith of his career. Roy Williams was fading, but still waited. I think that story came out after the season. And then Krzyzewski a year out. I mean, there's no easy way to leave when you're a legend, but there's also a way not to do it. And it seems like Jim Boeheim has personified that, as you alluded.
Yeah, it's complicated, and he's a complicated guy. There's some, like, John Feinstein wrote today that Boeheim deserved to write his own ending, and there's certainly an argument for
right.
that. I wrote today, Paul, that, you know, Jim Boeheim in the 152 years that Syracuse University has existed is the single most transformative figure, and I believe that. No dean, no president, nobody defined and helped that university's brand more than Jim Boeheim. But Krzyzewski offered some good insight to me today. He basically said that Jim Boeheim really didn't know. You know what I mean? He was never completely sure, is exactly what Coach K said. And when you do something as long as he has, he was never completely sure. And that indecision led, I think, to some of the awkwardness. The indecision that hung over him didn't allow the university to set up a more refined plan. But I think, Paul, in your question, when you bring up Jay Wright and you bring up Mike Kay and you bring up Roy Williams, I do think some of the comments Jim Boeheim made to ESPN a couple weeks ago that probably got a lot of attention for what he said about Pitt and what he said about Wake Forest. I really think the core of those comments was that he thought the game was in a terrible place, which a lot of veteran coaches do. And God bless Jim Boeheim. He's never been afraid to say anything out loud, Paul, right? So he just basically came out and said it. And he said, this is why Mike Kay stepped down. This is why Jay Wright stepped down. Like, I mean, the game has changed and evolved in significant ways. And there's a generation of coaches that are cycling out now that preferred the way it was. And in a lot of ways, when you look at the landscape of college basketball, Paul, it's really becoming increasingly unrecognizable. The legendary coaches we knew on the sideline for so many decades are disappearing at a pretty quick rate. And the way the player procurement has happened with the portal and the overtime elite and the G League, we don't have the same connection to star college basketball players that we used to. If you look at the All-ACC first team, for example, and it's Isaiah Wong, and it's Appleby from Wake Forest, and Baycott from Carolina, we're all nice players, but it's hard to say that they are household names. If you walk down the street in Boston, Chicago, or Seattle, and ask people who the people on the first team All-ACC are, they would have no idea. Well, there's an argument 15 years ago, these are guys who are going to be the number one pick in the draft, and guys that have been in school a few years and stayed at the same place and have built up more brand equity. So the sport is changing fast, and it's not a coincidence that we're seeing some of these legends leave amid that change.
Pete Thamel, many thanks. We take a break. We're live in Nashville at the SEC Men's Basketball Tournament.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's HIMS.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. HIMS.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We welcome all of you back. This is what the bracket looks like right now as games going on. So Mississippi State has beaten Florida in overtime. And it will be, what, Mississippi State and Alabama tomorrow? Is that right? Am I reading this bracket correctly? I am. Really an amazing game between Florida and Mississippi State. Went down to Mississippi State. Florida scored with about 15 seconds left. Mississippi State immediately came around, and Florida did not connect. Tennessee and Ole Miss starts here in a few minutes. The game's tonight. Vanderbilt and LSU, and then Auburn and Arkansas. Let's get to the phones for the first time. So there's a lot of talk about Auburn, and we'll get to them in just a moment. Let's get to the phone calls at 855-242-7285, and Dr. Mel starts it off for us.
Good evening, Paul. How are you this evening?
Hey, what's happening?
We're doing quite well. Thank you for you and the staff, all that you guys do, and really, really appreciate you. Richard Jefferson, tell you hello.
And Well, thank you, Mel. Thank you very much.
I was glad, Paul. I have a little story to share in regards to the Brandon Miller situation. And Richard is well aware of what happened with our son, our baby boy, Mel Jr. Mel Jr. was murdered in Birmingham January the 5th, 2001, 22 years ago. Mel had been in the Navy, served his country, had family, four boys. Our grandson, his youngest son, was 2 months old at the time. He was robbed and murdered. The area you're familiar with, Churchwood Boulevard, in Birmingham. And to this day, they have not identified the person or persons that took Mel Jr.'s life. No one deserved to die. And, but, you know, after a period of about 8 years, I finally realized that I had to forgive the person or persons that murdered our son, and I had to move on. So for the past 15 years, I've made a public appeal to the person or persons that took our son's life, that I forgive you, and you need to turn yourself in to law enforcement. You need to come off the street. Now, here's the deal. I was glad to see Brandon come forward, and my prayer and hope is not only Brandon and his teammates and coaches. I've been praying for them because no one knows the pain Mr. Harris is suffering today. His mother, but a parent that lost a child to a violent death. And of course, Marilyn Kubler Ross in her book, Death and Dying, 1969, describes the five stages of grief. I went through those, but I came to the realization that forgiveness had to be there. And so just a tragic situation, as Brandon mentioned on yesterday, but he needs counseling, the whole team, along with Coach Oates, and I hope the university will step up to the plate and do that for them. And just such a tragedy. And at the same time, the University of Georgia, they suffered that great tragedy. So we have to pray. And just at this point, this is something that will be with him the rest of his life. And as I mentioned, it's been 22 years since our son was murdered. I'll be 72 my birthday. I don't know if they'll ever identify that person, but I want to look them in the eye and say to them, I forgive you. The Lord forgave me for my sins and transgression, but you need to turn yourself into the law. And so we're just praying for the situation for Brandon in Alabama. And thank you for all you do, Paul. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Your show is an outstanding program. It's not just a sports journalism program, but you give people like myself, a retired healthcare professional, to express our concerns. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart, you and the staff, and God bless you. Keep up the great work.
Mel, thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to talk to you always, and especially today, to hear your testimony there. You be well. Take care of yourself. Dustin is up next in Tulsa.
Hey, Paul. Good afternoon. Hope Nashville is treating you guys well.
It is.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, I wanted to talk about Razorback football really briefly. I'm getting excited for this season. You know, spring ball starts today, and we, you know, like I do, that our deficiency was in the secondary, especially last year. And I think that they've worked to really shore that up with hiring, you know, new defensive coordinators in Williams and Woodson, but also in the guys that they've gone out and gotten from Baylor, and then and yesterday picking up a five-star cornerback out of Georgia, in addition to Quincy McAdoo and Dwight McLaughlin. I was wondering kind of what your take on it is now. I know you haven't been really hot on Arkansas, but given all the changes that Pittman's made, who, by the way, I love Sam Pittman. If you could have him on your show during spring ball, I would really, really love to hear that if that fits. But just kind of wonder what you see as we're heading into spring ball as kind of how the transfer portal has treated Arkansas and what Pittman's been able to line up there. Is he got another, you know, lightning in a bottle situation with Drew Sanders?
Dustin, first of all, we'll definitely have Sam on. It's been too long. I feel pretty good about what I'm seeing, and I don't mean to be harsh on last year. I mean, as high as I was on Pittman going into the season, naturally there was a letdown, which, you know, see, I wouldn't call the season a disaster, but it certainly missed the mark badly, and I think he's smart enough to know that, and he has adjusted to that. So I think that's all you can do. But it's impossible to know what a team looks like just based on what you're seeing in the offseason. It is a critical part of the year, though.
Right. Well, I will let you get back to it, let some other people get in here, but I really look forward to hearing from Sam Pittman, and I enjoyed the show yesterday.
Thank you.
Looking forward to hearing from more of the coaches today.
You bet. You take care of yourself. AC is up next.
Good afternoon, Mr. Feinbaum. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I have a question for you. Who are some teams we should be looking out for when we do the March Madness bracket? Like, they're capable of upsetting a lot of teams, or the teams who are capable of winning championships. Help me out, man. So much for taking my call. Holler.
Thanks, AC. We'll get to that in a minute. We have a lot going on, as you can tell. We are between games. Florida falls to Mississippi State in the first game today. So Kyle Tucker will talk about the University of Kentucky. It's been one of the most bizarre seasons in UK history. Kyle will join us from The Athletic right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Tired of
ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to Amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's Amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Here we're live in Nashville, where the first game is in the books. Second game about to get underway. Mississippi State advances to play Alabama tomorrow. Let's get back to the calls before our guests show up here, and let's check in with Daniel in Lexington. Hey, Daniel.
Hi.
Go right ahead, Daniel.
So I was just wondering if you think Bryce Young or Will Levis will get drafted to the Seahawks this year.
Well, I think Levis would be in play more than Bryce. I mean, Bryce is very likely going to be the first player taken, so I don't think that's going to be on the board. But I think Levis is very capable of being on one of those lists. Hey, thank you for the call. Mike is up next in Birmingham. Hey, Mike.
How you doing, Paul? How you doing?
Hey there.
You all right? Yeah, okay. Yeah, team prayer for Brandon Miller, and he came forward and made it and gave out his story to the authorities and everything. He didn't clear and everything. Poor Alabama and the Coastal Spangler, the victim, young lady lost her life, and justice will prevail. Justice will prevail. Paul, going to the NCAA tournament next week, how do you like Alabama's chances going all the way to the Final Four? How do you like their chances? I feel they'll make it to the Final Four. What do you think?
Yeah. Hey, thanks, Mike. Appreciate it very much. You want to give us a ring? It's 855-242-7285. We have a couple of guests we'll be dropping by here in just a few minutes. Let's go to Trey in Arkansas. Hey, Trey.
Hey, Paul. I was wanting to ask about the Razorback. What do you think the Razorback schedule is? I have a thought on it, and also our chances of winning the tournament. I think Arkansas's three permanent opponents will be Texas A&M, and Missouri.
Yeah, I have not. I think Arkansas is in a really weird spot when it comes to the permanent opponents, because so much of what they normally see. Now that Texas is involved, so here's a schedule for this year. It's a the big game is against BYU. That's always an interesting matchup. But they have the Alabama game. They're at Florida. That's not a game you see very often. And of course, the non-conference schedule is manageable when you look at it. Hey, thank you so much for the call, Trey. We really appreciate it. We mentioned that Kyle would be here. Kyle, good to see you. Thanks so much. And I know it's been just a fascinating year when it comes to your beat. Take us through, the last couple of months and just the highs and lows.
Yeah, it's been kind of a season unlike any other. You start the season, preseason top five. You got the returning National Player of the Year, all this sort of expectation, a weird sort of expectation, sort of a hope that you're not going to that you're going to redeem this first round loss to St. Peter's,
right?
Because all these guys came back, and then it goes south fast. 10-6 start. Oscar doesn't look the same. Calipari's coaching gets called into question. I mean, you and I have talked over the course of the year a couple times, and it wasn't just sort of one dip or one ascent. It's been this roller coaster of up and down where you know, I think I tweeted the other day that, like, this team is as hard to bury as it is to believe in, and vice versa. It's hard to know who they're going to be week to week. But I would say that the way the season ended, you know, you win 5 out of 6, the one game Vanderbilt you lose by, you know, on a late shot without both of your point guards. But to go then turn around and win at Arkansas with no point guard at all against the most talented backcourt in the SEC, yeah, I think people believe again. I don't know if it's safe to believe in this team again, but people, I think, you know, Kentucky fans at least do. And it's an interesting spot for Cal. I think we're about to find out how much more people can hold on to the idea that he can, you know, be great again at Kentucky.
Kyle, it, beyond all that, I'm answering my own question here, which is a terrible thing to do when you're talking, but I was trying to get a feel for where he is with this culture of Kentucky basketball. How much of the next 3 weeks is going to determine that?
Well, I don't think he's going anywhere unless he chooses to go somewhere. I mean, if he loses, you know, first round of the SEC tournament, loses right. first round of the NCAA tournament, unless he wants to leave, he's not going anywhere. But I think, again, in terms of do people buy into, does the fan base want him, still want him here?
Yeah.
That's what we're going to, I think, determine over these next 2 or 3 weeks. They do have the number one class coming in, at least on paper, is sort of one of the classic Calipari number one classes. He hasn't had one of those in a little while. And I think if you have that and you're coming off of at least, say, a Sweet 16. I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about that lately. What is what's the floor of what could he do to restore faith that moving forward they're going to be back on top? He certainly got to get out of the first weekend of the NCAA tournament.
Right.
I think if they don't do that, if they lose again in the first week of the NCAA tournament, people are going to not want to hear one word about this number one ranked recruiting class. I think if they make a little bit of a run, even if they don't get to the Final Four, maybe people believe again that he can do something with high-end talent.
And not to keep moving the goalpost, but that's pretty bizarre. I mean, we're talking about a program that, short of the Final Four, the seasons in the past have not been considered successful, and we're also to the point where people are bellyaching, well, it's been 10 years now
yeah.
since a national championship. Yeah. And I'm not coming down on you because I was curious. I realize he's not going anyplace, but you know, if you look at Cal 5 years ago versus today from a public opinion poll standpoint, he's not doing well, is he?
No, he's doing better today than he was doing a month and a half ago or even, you know, 3 weeks ago. But no, I don't know that he has this sort of rock solid. If you'd taken a poll of Kentucky fans in 2015, whether John Calipari, they'd want anybody other than John Calipari as their coach. I mean, there's no, you'd be hard pressed to find him unless they were just the hardcore old school people who had
we're
a real
upset
distaste
about
for the one
him not being Adolph Rupp,
or you know, not being Rupp, or maybe not finishing off that undefeated season
right.
in 2015. And maybe that's the turning point. I mean, they've been really close. They've been one shot in the Elite Eight twice from getting back to the Final Four. But since 2015, when you've got this unbelievable juggernaut of a team, you win 38 straight games and then lose in the Final Four, it does feel like, I don't know if the curse is the right word, but, you know, they've had a crazy run of injuries since then. His first few years at Kentucky, nobody got hurt. Now everybody's hurt all the time. And they've had really good teams that, you know, whether you want to say he got out-coached at the end, I think there are some examples where people would say that, or they just didn't get it done. It's been a while now since if you took a poll of Kentucky fans, they would unanimously say he's our guy. And I think in that way, these are really critical weeks for him.
Beyond the fans, and again, let's take his leaving off the table for a second, but there was so much in the offseason, Kyle, about the Mark Stoops situation, the Mitch Barnhart situation. And I mean, I don't want to use just the random Kentucky people I run into, but there still seems to be an air of uncertainty up there just among his relationships. And I realize everybody's guessing here. It's not like anybody's saying, oh, yeah, I really like Cal or I really hate him. But what do you think it is with the administration?
The relationship issue. I mean, Cal. Look, I mean, when Cal's at his best, he's sort of untouchable, right? And he operates that way. I think with a swagger that, again, the fan. When you're winning, the fans love. You know, I'm going to say what I want. I'm going to do what I want. I am the king of the hill. I'm going to get what I want. And I think that friction that really sort of came out, I think that has existed, but really came to the forefront and became a huge story this summer, was because, you know, Cal still was in I want and I get what I want
right.
mode, but he hadn't necessarily delivered the results that you know come with that. And you're already one of the, you know, two or three highest paid coaches in America. You know, your staff is among the highest paid in the country. And I think from Mitch Barnhart's perspective, it is, I've given you a lot of things. You know, it's not like there hasn't been a coach at Kentucky that said, like, I just wish we had better resources
yeah.
in Kentucky basketball in a long time. And for Cal to come out and say that certainly created friction. And especially when, as you said, it's, you know, 2015 was the last Final Four, and now over a decade since they won a national championship.
I don't want to compare Cal to anybody else because he's not. But, I mean, we just got through watching a 78-year-old coach yesterday go down in flames. John Calipari is a long way from Jim Boeheim, but you know, it does seem like he is at a crossroads, though, and it's harder to believe that he's going to be where he used to be, especially, you know, with the Nate Oates's of Eric Musselman's. You know, the odds are, according to what Pete Thamel told us 30 minutes ago, Chris Beard's coming into this league. I mean, this is a tough neighborhood now.
It is. I would also point out that Musselman and Oates have got to get to a Final Four. You know, they haven't done that yet.
True.
You know, if you're judging on regular season,
Chris Beard can say that.
We're sort of what's that?
Chris Beard has one.
Right. Chris Beard has
a couple of jobs ago.
Yeah, and you know, I don't think John Calipari wants to trade places with Chris Beard anytime soon either. You know, I think if you're going to, you know, we could point to a lot of years where Cal had really good regular season years and we dismissed those because he didn't get to a Final Four.
Right.
And so there is also that when you talk about who are these guys coming after him. I think it's very fair when we got a 64-year-old guy who hasn't been to a Final Four in 7 or 8 years, who's, you know, gotten outclassed in a couple of occasions, you know, to say, is he going to get back there? I think the one thing you hold on to is that he hasn't sort of stopped the recruiting. Like, he hasn't. You know, a lot of these guys you see, they just get tired. You know, they don't want to be out there on the road.
Right.
They don't want to grind. They don't want to do that. I don't think you see that with Cal. I think it's more with him, a stubbornness at times. But I would say if you look at how this season went, and it went off the rails right midway through the season, since then you have to give him some credit, too, for managing this thing, for keeping it. There's a lot of guys who, if their team had that level of expectation, that level of sort of outward and inward, I mean, look at the fan base, the level of criticism kind of avalanching down, and you have guys on this team that have talked about being sort of in dark places. He's managed, it used to be managing ego, and this season I think has been managing psyche. And so he's kept it from going in the ditch. I'll give him credit for that. And so can he get back to the top? I don't know, but I don't see a guy like Boeheim where I feel like he's at the very, very bitter end and he's just refusing to go away and he's, you know, doesn't have the level of energy and effort that he had before. I don't think it's that. I don't think it's for lack of trying for Cal. And I think he's a prideful enough guy that he's going to try to make some adjustments, because I don't think he wants to, he does not want to be the guy who sort of limps out the door or gets shoved out the door.
No, and I will say this, working in television, but if Cal quit tomorrow, he'd have offers.
Yes. Yes. I mean, that's the thing. There's a lot of things Cal could do, and I don't think he's talked about it. I don't think he wants to be the shriveled up old guy, you know, with her dabbing the corners of his mouth at the dais.
We're talking Digger and Dick here.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't want to be that guy, but I think he wants. I mean, I think one thing he'd love to do is kind of give two middle fingers to the people that doubted him on the way out the door, make one more run, and be done. He's got all the money he could ever want.
Yeah.
And he's got a pile of it sitting in front of him that's keeping, you know, which is why I said at the beginning, he's not going anywhere unless he wants to. You know, so he's an interesting spot right now. But, yeah, I think everybody understands that, not so much this week. I don't think he's ever cared much about the conference tournament. But the weeks that follow are huge for him in terms of setting the stage. What can he be? Can he still be the king of the hill?
Always great to see you, Kyle. Thank you.
Thank you.
The never-ending Calipari story. We'll be following it throughout the month of March with Kyle.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.